Welcome to Groundwire Community Radio News, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced by Megan Thomas and Carly Forbes at CJSF 90.1 FM on unceded Coast Salish territories, which include the Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, Squamish, and Musqueam peoples.
So even if we can find ads and places we can live, if we can't afford to pay the rent, we can't move.
On the 28th of this month, Jorge Luis and Ildar are actually going to speak before the Subcommittee for International Human Rights in the Canadian Parliament.
He dreamt that the train tracks were getting flooded with water, and he was watching it, the water going up, and then it flowed right over the tracks.
In this episode, students protest the deregulation of tuition in Nova Scotia. CN Rail imposes an injunction against Judy Da Silva from Grassy Narrows. A caravan touring across Canada raising awareness about missing and disappeared students in Mexico. A teaching support staff strike at Simon Fraser University. And a look at Record Store Day in Vancouver. But first, here are the headlines.
Hello, and welcome to Groundwire. Bill C-2, also known as the Respect for the Communities Act, passed its third reading in the Canadian House of Commons on March 23rd. The bill seeks to restrict opening of further supervised consumption sites in addition to Vancouver's InSite supervised injection site. It does so by providing strict legal criteria that would directly impede the creation of more sites. InSite is able to operate due to an exception to the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, which otherwise prevents the trafficking of drugs in Canada. The Supreme Court decision applies to InSite only and gives no guarantee that a second site or a new site in another city would also be established under an exception to the Act. As of April 23, the bill has also had its second reading in the Senate and has now been referred to the Standing Committee on Legal and Constitutional Affairs. The Senate has the power to amend or terminate the bill, so at this stage there is no guarantee that the bill will ultimately pass. One place where drug users are calling for harm reduction services is Surrey, BC, specifically the community Wally, a known open drug market, the centre of which is at 135 A Street. The cited team spoke to Doug Nickerson, a homeless drug user who has spent the last 5 years trying to get clean needles and crack pipes to users on 135A.
What Surrey doesn't have is a safe place for drug users to do their drugs. It's typically outdoors, watching over your shoulder. And there's a health issue about that, a safety issue about that.
My name is Matt Granlund. I'm community programmer and host of Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music and talk show on CITR 101.9 FM.
Thank you to Matthew Granlund, CITR, with audio files from Harm Reduction Attack, Episode 5 of Cited, airing Wednesday at 5:30 p.m. on CJSF. For past and present episodes, see cjsf.ca or citedpodcast.com.
As of April 26, the Teaching Support Staff Union at Simon Fraser University is on strike, beginning job action with an overtime ban. In a TSSU statement, Chief Steward Reagan Bellin said, "We've been trying for 12 months to bargain a collective agreement that solves our members' real problems. In March, our members voted 92% in favor of strike action. Additional pressure on the employer is required to convince them to bargain meaningfully. Telling us about the potential for future bargaining is no way to reach a collective agreement." Bellin noted to Groundwire specific bargaining issues, including sessional seniority rights, access to work, classroom size, and equity for members doing ESL and translation work. Bellin also talked to Groundwire about the wider national context for the TSSU strike action.
So one of the things that was really heartening to see in the labor struggles that were happening in Ontario is just how much community support was shown. There was a lot of undergrads walking the picket lines, lots of undergraduate societies sending open letters to the provost of U of T. It's those kinds of actions that get us to a collective agreement, because it demonstrates that the community also understands what's at stake. And so, like, those displays of solidarity let us know that the issues we're advocating for are not exclusive to our membership, but they're everyone's issues who want to be in academics in the future, who care about labor rights and care about having a future with some sort of stability.
Job action is set to escalate depending on Simon Fraser University's response at the bargaining table. For updates, see tssu.ca.
Now it's time for our feature stories. Students in Halifax have been organizing against the deregulation of tuition as well as other issues affecting students, including gender-based violence and divestment from fossil fuels. Jordan Roberts from CKDU brings us this report.
On February 4, 2015, students from Dalhousie University, mobilized under the Dalhousie Student Union and Students Against Fee Hikes, marched in the Canadian Federation of Students National Day of Action. On April 9th, the Nova Scotia Liberal government released their budget, which, amongst other drastic and impactful cuts, included a deregulation of tuition fees. On April 21st, the Dalhousie Board of Governors met to approve the first step in this deregulation by increasing tuition fees 3% across the board. Fees for international students and associated fees for those in graduate programs are also on the rise. Students attended this Board of Governors meeting with signs voicing their concerns over the fee hikes and that the Board of Governors has been inadequate and inactive on other issues concerning students, including sexualized and gender-based violence on campus and divestment from fossil fuels. Caitlin Armstrong, a member of Dal's South House Sexual and Gender Resource Center, was one of those students.
The reason that we as students were coming was because we feel as though the Board of Governors just don't represent what students are wanting on campus. And there have been groups such as South House that have actively been pressuring the Board of Governors to listen and to take into account the things that we're interested in. And specifically for South House, it's the issue of gendered violence and misogyny and just all that sexualized violence on campus, and the fact that they're just not listening or taking into account what South House is advocating for.
Emily Davidson, a staff member of the Dal Student Union, felt that University President Richard Florizone's reactions to the Liberal budget were a clear sign of the board's alienation from the 18,000 students it represents.
Florizone made comments today saying that he thought that post-secondary education came out all right in this budget, which I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because this is like one of the most radical deregulations of tuition fees in our lifetime. And then the president of this university says we did better than health. Like, that is just, I think, a really strong indication of how students can't actually trust the Board of Governors to do what's right for students.
Isabella Fum, a first-year management and journalism student, shares the frustration that student voices are not heard at the table for important discussions and decisions.
They do not have the right to, push us aside. They say we don't, get involved in consultations and we don't get involved in these things, but when we do show up, it's like, hey, you guys don't matter. I just find that they think that they can say that we should have a voice within campus and that we are represented, within, Dal, but when it does come time for us to, speak up and things, they don't want us to speak up, and that's, the major problem.
Ofum does see hope for Dalhousie in the campus organizing she and other students are involved in.
I really feel that it's important for students to come united, regardless of the fact that, even if you do not support, a specific group, if you do not support, if you have no idea what's going on, it's still good to come out and show your support, because numbers are great, regardless of whether you know about, the stats of the fee hikes or whatever. It's still good to just see students supporting other students, and that's what I would like to see in all these organizations and groups within the campus coming together.
Armstrong shares this sentiment, calling for more links between students and Nova Scotians impacted by the recent budget.
Deregulation and tuition fees and austerity budgets affect everyone, and it's if we're all working towards the same things, I feel, as though to get more representation and to actually have the Board of Governors listen, and if you work on your own to get those things, then you have a limited place that you can get to, I think. But we're all working together, and I think showing that students are students, not just separate entities, and that we're working together, I think is more powerful, and it just shows the links that we're all kind of working towards the same thing.
This has been Jordan Roberts from CKDU 88.1 FM in Kapuktuk, Halifax, for Groundwire.
Our next feature is about a group from Iguala, Mexico, who are currently touring across Canada to raise awareness about the 6 murdered people and 43 disappeared students in Ayotzinapa, Mexico. On April 28th, a delegation will testify before the Subcommittee for International Human Rights at the Canadian Parliament in Ottawa. Dolores Mora from CJSF spoke with Timo Schaefer, a local organizer with CIPO Vancouver, and Ilda Lejedeño Vargas, a single mother and craft seller who lost her son in the attack.
My name is Timo Schaefer. I'm with CIPO Vancouver. Tonight is actually our final public event of the From Ayotzinapa to Ottawa caravan in Vancouver. It's a fiesta, a fundraising party to say goodbye to our guests, Jorge Luis and Ilda, who have been with us for this last week and have been sharing their story of loss and of struggle. And tomorrow they're going on. They have more stops in Canada. They're going to Montreal and then they're going to go to Ontario. In Iguala, in the state of Guerrero in Mexico, last September, on the 26th and 27th of September, there was an attack carried out by municipal police forces against students of a teacher's college, the Ayotzinapa Teachers College. In that attack, three students were killed, three bystanders were killed, and 43 students were disappeared, that is, they were kidnapped by the police, and after that, they have not been seen again. Their fate and their whereabouts are unknown. And so our guest, Jorge Luis, is a schoolmate of the disappeared students. They belong to the Ayotzinapa Teachers College. And students of that college for years, I mean for decades even, have suffered from harassment, threats, intimidations, and attacks on the part of various armed forces in Mexico. Our other guest, Ilda Lejedeño Vargas, is the mother of one of the disappeared students, Jorge Antonio Izapa Lejedeño. And so the two of them are here to talk about their attempts to hold the Mexican government accountable for the missing students, to pressure the Mexican government to reopen the case, the investigation into the disappearances and the murders. And because they say that the Mexican government has closed the case and they're not listening to them anymore, so unfortunately they have to go to foreign countries in order to tell their story. And they're here in Canada specifically. Canada is a country, of course, that has huge trade relations with Mexico, that has very important diplomatic relations with Mexico. They're a partner of the North Atlantic Free Trade Alliance. And so they're here to ask the Canadian government, the Canadian Parliament, to put as much pressure as it can on the Mexican government to keep looking for the student, for the students, to keep open the investigation, to protect the parents and the students from harassment by the police, which they have been suffered constantly since the students have disappeared. And so even on the 28th of this month, Jorge Luis and Ilda are actually going to speak before the Subcommittee for International Human Rights in the Canadian Parliament in order to ask that the Canadian government take cognizance of the human rights crisis in Mexico. And they want to ask very specifically that the Canadian Parliament send a delegation to Mexico in order to investigate the human rights crisis there and in order to investigate the disappearances and the murders of students of Ayotzinapa.
Muy buenas tardes a todos. Yo soy Dolores Mora Lolita de CJSF 90.1 FM y estamos con doña Ilda Lejedeño Vargas. Ella es mamá de
Jorge Antonio Tizapa Lejedeño
y es uno de los 43 jóvenes que desapareció. She is Ilda Lejedeño Vargas. She is Jorge Antonio Tizapa Lejedeño's mom. And she is here because they want to inform the Canadian people about the human rights violations who have happened in Ayotzinapa. And they are here because they are asking for solidarity too.
Arbitrariedades que comete con los estudiantes y padres de familia, lo que esperamos a venir en esta caravana es que la gente sensibilice
They want to show to the Mexican government that they are not alone in their struggle, asking to the Canadian people to ask to their own government to put pressure on the in this human rights case. And they are thinking that could be that could happen, and because Mexico and Canada, they have trades and they have a diplomatic ties.
Thank you to Dolores Mora from CJSF for those interviews.
On April 10th, a water ceremony was held by Grassy Narrows First Nation, situated 80 kilometers north of Kenora, Ontario. This was following the derailment of several CN trains in northern Ontario over the last couple months. The Grassy Narrows Women's Drum Group conducted the ceremony, along with other members of the community and supporters, and Anishinaabe Water Protector Josephine Madiman, near the CN rail tracks. This resulted in an injunction against Judy De Silva, one of the community's most respected high-profile members. Michael Welsh from CKUW in Winnipeg has this story.
Judy De Silva is a member of Grassy Narrows First Nation. She's a frontline Anishinaabe activist in the struggle against clear-cut logging and the destruction of nature on her territory, and for the preservation of Indigenous culture. On April 10th, she was presented with an injunction. The injunction was related to a threat by activists to situate a traditional water ceremony on the CN main rail line at mile 106 and highway 671. The purpose of the water ceremony was to protect the territory and its water from the threat of an oil and gas derailment. Following the advice of a First Nations elder, the activist decided to go ahead with the water ceremony, but not on the tracks, but rather several yards away. OPP officers were on the scene, monitoring the activity to ensure they complied with CN's request to not go ahead with a blockade. Nevertheless, following the ceremony, a CN representative and an OPP officer seemed unsatisfied with the ceremony. Thor Aitkenhead, a longtime volunteer with Friends of Grassy Narrows and the Winnipeg Indigenous Peoples Solidarity Movement, spoke about the incident and what happened next.
Sheriff pulls up. He walks over and he starts reading the injunction to Judy and Jane Doe and John Doe and everybody else who was standing around, right? That's who it was addressed to. And he gets about maybe a third in or something like that when it occurs to me, it was a bunch of stuff, of course, that nobody did. Nobody blocked the tracks. But he was talking about, you know, this is what the injunction was for. Nobody committed any of the things he was reading out. 1:30 in, though, just as that thought occurred, Judy just went like this to Nunda. It's like, this is it. Nunda, get your drum. So he gets his drum and he starts singing, and then everybody starts singing, and the guy starts shaking. He's reading his papers.
A court hearing was then held on Thursday, April 16th at the courthouse in Kenora, Ontario. Judy De Silva, joined by longtime ally Chickadee Richard, took the stand to address the charges. But since De Silva's legal counsel was not available to represent her client at that time, the decision was made to postpone the hearing. About 35 supporters packed the Kenora courtroom and followed her out to a nearby courtyard where they held a peaceful ceremony. Following is some of the audio from that event.
Our existence of our natural resources is at stake, and we're not going to stand by. And that is not a threat. That is, in fact, a bloody promise. I want this to be carried out across the country, that we have to get rid of the government today as we see it. The progressive conservative government is destroying the very lives of our people, what Leon Jourdain had just spoke about. And I think this becomes a national issue.
As a member of the Blackfoot Confederacy, this is why I'm here. I'm here to exercise my right as a nation. When another nation asks for help, this is what we need to do. So I am asking all other nations across this country that they need to honor the cry and the plea of Judy and her people, because right now they are being attacked by and a negligent corporation that is abusing the powers in this country.
Then a guy came by yesterday and he told me he had a really weird dream. He dreamt that the train tracks were getting flooded with water, and he was watching it, the water going up, and then it flowed right over the tracks. Then he woke up. So I feel like that the water spirits, ancestors, are with us. And that's all we gotta remember, is that whenever we do anything, we do it in the spirit of our ancestors and our future generations.
The next hearing is scheduled to take place the morning of May 14th in the Kenora Courthouse. Allies of Da Silva and Grassy Narrows are encouraged to show up then and support her. More information about Judy Da Silva and Grassy Narrows can be found on the website www.freegrassy.net. From Winnipeg, in the heart of occupied Anishinaabe Aking and homeland of the Métis, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
Appearing in that report were Thor Eckenhead of Winnipeg Indigenous Peoples Solidarity Movement, former Treaty 3 Grand Chief Leon Jourdain, Tommy Keegan, Milton-born with a tooth of the Blackfoot Confederacy, and Judy Da Silva of Grassy Narrows First Nation.
On Saturday, March 7, 2015, Simon Fraser University delivered notices to students and families living in Louis Riel House residence that in August the building would be torn down. Louis Riel House is SFU's only family residence and is essentially low-income housing. The closing of the building is due to ongoing mold and other livability issues that residents say were existing and unreported to them when they began residency. In response to the eviction, residents sought public attention, with actions including protests and, on March 10th, a press conference. Here is an excerpt from that conference.
We were told one thing by the university and now something completely different happened. I mean, nobody wants to interrupt a meeting. We would have preferred to be on the agenda for May, but there just wasn't the time because we will be homeless in August. And many of us, probably about 50% of our group, will discontinue their studies as a result of this. Up until this point, the university has refused to speak with our group and or even acknowledge that we actually exist as a group. They will speak with tenants one-on-one. The members of our group who have spoken with them one-on-one have been told that all the university can do is hire a person to help them look up ads on Craigslist. That's a super idea. Again, as we've explained to the university, we can't afford to move. So even if we can find ads and places we can live, if we can't afford to pay the rent, we can't move.
Residents also occupied the March 26th Board of Governors meetings to address SFU's lack of a rehousing plan. Teresa Detling, a single parent, undergraduate student, Louis Riel House resident, and a spokesperson for the group of evicted residents, spoke at the meeting.
Individually, members of our group have meetings with the head of housing. They have said, we will find someone to help you look for an ad on Craigslist. And you may be able to apply for a nursery of $500. I think that's profoundly insensitive when someone says to you or to your representatives, I cannot afford to move. And the response is something like, we'll help you find out in crisis, because it doesn't acknowledge the problem. To be clear, on the other side of this campus, the SFU Trust has a building that they subsidize for their employees. People who work on this campus cannot afford to live up here without the assistance of the university, and they get it. They're allowed to rent at less, and they can buy in at 15% or 20% under market value, I believe. We as a group need the university's help. We are not unaware of the fact that the root core problem is coming from the province and their refusal to properly fund the university. We would rather be working with SFU to fight the province. But what's happening as a result of the housing office and other administrative offices is we're having to fight SFU. Our core group is only 33 people. It will cost money and it will be hard work to relocate us and help us. We're aware of this. But we're fighting so that we can continue our education and ensure that our families have futures.
During the meeting, SFU President Andrew Petter indicated that SFU would support the students, but did not suggest any details as to specific next steps or the parameters of that commitment. To follow this story, visit lrhcommunity.wordpress.com. Thank you to Gurpreet Cambo, SFU student, campus news journalist, and CJSF contributor for the audio. For more on the SFU stories you heard today, listen to past and future episodes of SFU Ideas and Issues, Wednesdays at 12 p.m. from cjsf.ca.
Now it's time for our community radio report. CJSF live broadcasted from several locations on Record Store Day in Vancouver on Saturday, April 18th. CJSF's music director, Kyra Sibley, discussed some of the pros and cons of Record Store Day.
The third Saturday in April is Record Store Day. It started in 2007 by a few record store owners in the U.S. And Record Store Day was an attempt to, quote, celebrate the culture of the independently owned record store. So, to mark the occasion, some artists and labels press vinyl specifically for release on Record Store Day, and this has made the day just as much about the particular products as it has about the stores. However, running parallel with the celebrating and purchasing has been mounting criticism towards Record Store Day. The Guardian, The Quietus, Vice, and recently exclaimed Valran stories amounting to the conclusion that Record Store Day has neither celebrated the original culture of the independent record store, nor has it helped the independent labels or artists who have contributed to this particular space. Yeah, there's huge celebrations going on here in Vancouver, live performances, prizes. I remember when I lived in Calgary, there was cake. This year, there's record signings. And though not the sole reason, one could say that the growing popularity of Record Store Day has heavily contributed to the rise in vinyl sales over the past 5 years.
Kyra also spoke with Dave Gowans, one of the owners of Red Cat Records, about the pros and cons of Record Store Day.
Well, I think the way that it's laid out, there's a lot of the times that less copies of very popular releases make it up to Canada, and I think that creates frustration for people when they're lining up in the morning and they get into a store and a store only has 5 or 6 copies of one particular release, and then the way that things go up on eBay or are sold, you know, the next day for 10 times the amount, it makes people feel a little discouraged, but you know, so we just try to get as much as we can in for people and hope that, you know, everyone will be happy when they come. And then I think like the pros of it it's nice to you know, host an event and have local bands playing in the shop, and just to see so many people come out is exciting. It just makes you feel like people care about small business and community and stuff like that.
CJSF volunteer Jacob Grudowski spoke with Keddie Yu, one of the co-owners of a new Vancouver-based record store, Horses Records.
This is your first Record Store Day, and how are you feeling after this 9 months of Horses Records and entering the Record Store Day circuit?
Good. It's every new thing we do is a learning experience, and I think for it being our first Record Store Day, we're doing pretty good. I mean, we have a lot of experience putting on shows here because we do that like a couple times a month. This is a very special type of show because it's all day and we're selling stuff more than usual shows. But yeah, learning things for next year and enjoying the turnout. I'm very happy with the amount of people that are out.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced by Megan Thomas and Carly Forbes at CJSF 90.1 FM. Headlines this week were written by Matt Grunlund and Megan Thomas.
We also thank Dolores Mora, Jordan Roberts, Michael Welsh, Gurpreet Cambo, The Cited Podcast, Kyra Sibley, Ophira Horwitz, and Jacob Grudowski. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download it at groundwire.ncra.ca. Groundwire is a project of the National Campus and Community Radio Association.